Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 7th, 2023. Well, it's a beautiful June 6th as I write this, and that makes it a good reason, if another was needed, to leave the TV off tonight. For today is one of the war state's high holidays, and the death cult will celebrate, blasting out its myriad memes of glory for the 79-year-old U.S.-led invasion of Nazi-occupied France over as many channels as it can muster. But some may find World War II sagas a trifle anticlimactic, as its sequel roils the nightly news, moving from storm to tempest and prompting the weary observation, what's past is prologue. Nick Moturn is a journalist, author, and co-coordinator with Kathy Kelly of BannKillerDrones.org, an organization founded to, quote, inform the American public about the illegality, immorality, and dreadful human consequences of U.S. drone attacks. Ban Killer Drones is calling for Ukraine and Russia to honor a moratorium proposed on the use of drones by numerous peace groups taking part this weekend at the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine. Nick Moturn in the first half. And whenever the question of peace or even an end to war is broached, invariably the Nazi qualifier is raised. But what about Hitler? Aren't there instances where good wars are necessary to defeat the forces of evil? If ever there was a loaded question. Mickey Zed is the author of Post Woke, a weekly podcast emanating from his native New York City. He is too a past lecturer and political activist, current martial artist and physical trainer, the author of a dozen books, and most importantly, perhaps, a sensei of the art of intellectual self-defense. Mickey Zed in the second half. But first, Nick Moturn and the fight to ban killer drones travels to Vienna for the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine. Well, welcome back to the program, Nick.
Yes, thank you. I'm really glad to be able to speak with you.
Well, me too. It's my great pleasure, of course. And it's been almost 2 years since we last talked. And since then, these war drones have proliferated at an alarming rate and variety of applications. Ban Killer Drones says that these weapons, quote, encourages inhuman and profoundly irresponsible behavior. Now you and Ban Killer Drones are off to Vienna for the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine going on this weekend. Tell me, Nick, who is the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine?
Well, the International Peace Bureau is the primary organizer of this, and they have people in different parts of the world, not that much in the United States, but they are very, very credible and well thought of. They're organizing this conference on this coming Saturday and Sunday to try to build up public support and agitation for negotiations to end the Russian-Ukraine war. Of course, now with this explosion at the dam and the flooding, the price for this war and human lives and suffering keeps rising. And one of the purposes of my trip and that of three of my colleagues going to Vienna is to hope we can raise the issue of weaponized drones and possibly get in the statement issued by the conference, the idea that there should be a moratorium on the part of Russia and the Ukraine, a moratorium in the use of weaponized drones, because we feel that this would tend to roll back the level of violence and would also maybe lead to other negotiations for an end of the fighting. And when we say irresponsible behavior, what we're talking about is the willingness of, you know, generals and politicians to attack people with drones, which is a very intimate kind of attack, really, because you can follow people and then kill them. You can wait your moment and attack rather than just raining down missiles. But it gives you the possibility of sending death-dealing power into places where you would never be willing to risk ground troops or pilots. So the history of, if you call it drone warfare, over the last 20 years, which was first launched by the United States, actually the first day of the war and invasion of Afghanistan. It was a failed drone attack, actually, against Taliban leader. In that 20 years, all we've seen from drone warfare is spreading of war and prolonging of war. We haven't seen any great resolution of any conflict. And this has spread then to other countries. It's really hard to know how many countries have experienced drone attacks of one kind or another. But we, of course, we do, you know, have, we can give you a list, but it's a weapon that really needs to be put back in the box because it increases the threat dramatically. And now, in, of course, in Ukraine, we have the possibility of nuclear, you know, back and forth, maybe with smaller, so-called smaller nuclear weapons. But nonetheless, once this boundary is crossed with nuclear weapons, we could have half the world being annihilated. So these killer drones are really like throwing matches around in a gas station where you have already gasoline all over the ground. And this is what we're trying to speak to people about.
You know, I would argue that we've crossed a nuclear threshold already with Britain, not only with Britain supplying depleted uranium weapons to Kiev, but also with the constant attacks against the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant that have gone on. You mentioned the destruction of the dam over these last few days. Typically, it's being blamed on Russia, but absolutely beggars all logic, as did the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline as well. But the dam was a reservoir providing the necessary coolant water for the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, and now we're looking at some kind of I don't know what the possibility of a Chernobyl-like incident and an effectively dirty nuclear weapon being released over the entire region. And we know already that the depleted uranium stockpile that was destroyed by the Russians, toxic radiation drifted all over Western Europe. And so I guess the same can be expected if this plant melts down. And so it looks like the nuclear war is here and just not as we imagined it.
Well, I think that in terms of the fear that is being, you know, generated intentionally, I would agree with that. But for instance, here in the United States, in the eastern part of the country, I live in Massachusetts, which is in the eastern part of the United States. Over the last couple of days, we've been experiencing smoke going all, you know, down in New York City, even from these wildfires that are occurring in Nova Scotia and other parts of Canada. And if you say, well, all right, supposing that was nuclear material, which if there were any kind of a nuclear incident in Canada or Nova Scotia, I mean, of course, it's part of Canada, then what we would have is a very similar situation. So we're really having nuclear terrorism, you know, being generated against people right now. And what we're desperately not wanting is to have the reality of the radiation become part of our lives and deaths. And this is something that we have so-called leaders in the world perfectly willing to risk and to scare the hell out of people.
Yeah, we have here. I'm on the west coast of North America, and the huge Oregon and Northern California fires and Washington State fires of a couple of years ago, we got the smoke despite the prevailing winds, you know, being coming off the ocean from the west and from the north. We were here on the west coast, we're getting the smoke from those fires, and it reminds how interconnected everybody is when it comes to atmospherics. And that I mean, I thought they learned this lesson in the First World War when they started using gas weapons and gassing their own troops, that we're all sharing the same biosphere, and
right,
and are subject to the vagaries of the weather. Well, in this call that you and the other peace groups are putting up for this moratorium, you ask that there be a stop the use of all weaponized drones in the Russia-Ukraine war and immediately negotiate a ceasefire upon negotiations to end the war. In the current situation, that's highly unlikely that in the middle of a war, something like that would happen, that somebody would lay down their arms or a certain munition that is particularly, they feel is particularly effective and will put them at a disadvantage to the enemy to put down. How about, though, Nick, if countries that aren't officially involved in this conflict, they stop supplying drones, like the United States, for example? And is there a call that the merchants of these weapons cease and desist, at least in these, in the situation where there's open conflict?
Well, I think that's a really good point, and it's something that actually we call for with other groups and have all along, which was a stopping of shipment of all weapons into this war. And so we didn't really speak to, in that call with other groups, to weaponized drones specifically, but it's certainly something we should consider doing.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Nick Mocher. Nick is a journalist, author. He's also coordinator with Kathy Kelly, a friend of this program, of the organization BannedKillerDrones.org. They are en route in the company of other organizations to Vienna this weekend for an international peace summit. Some of your fellow travelers in this, Nick, Code Pink, Veterans for Peace, and the German Drone Campaign and Banned Killer Drones, of course, are going to be at this IPP conference. In the moratorium preamble, you talk about the stopping the weaponized aerial drones that have been used over the last 21 years, as you mentioned, beginning in Afghanistan, but since used in a plethora of countries. Rather, what about this proliferation not only of aerial drones, but now we see underwater drones that attacked a bridge in this previously in the Ukraine conflict? And these micro drones, I mean, it seems like the sky is no longer the limit for the development and use of these weapons.
Well, I think that that's absolutely, of course, that's absolutely true. But I think that with respect to aerial drones, there is a much wider latitude for them to be used than there are drones. In other words, they can be spying on people, surveilling people, and following people in a much different way than other types of weaponized, what we say, weaponized drones, torpedoes, underwater craft. And so the emotional effect and the intelligence gathering effect of aerial drones and an eye in the sky dealing death from the sky, it's a very different kind of not only military situation, but emotional situation, and for me personally, but for other people too, I think we focused on aerial drones for that reason. And of course, they have become very, very common, and people can make their own at this point. And so having some kind of statement, if you want to say, from humanities, that this is not acceptable, we hope will be offered discouragement in the same way that the ban against the use of nuclear weapons, even though the U.S. and China and Russia haven't signed that, says that the majority of humanity is totally opposed to this as a weapon. And so that stands as, an intellectual, emotional bar against using it. And that's what we're looking for with this weapon, in the same way there is for cluster bombs and landmines and of course, poison gas, that kind of biological weapons.
There's a certain Damoclean aspect to these so-called loitering munitions, and we've seen them being used over Palestine, Gaza specifically, by the Israeli defense forces, so-called, where these, you can hear them, but you can't see them, these small drones buzzing overhead day and night and never knowing when they might release a targeted missile. Yep. It is a sort of a double double-edged sword.
Yes. Yep. And it's something, too, that gives anyone, we say anyone, I mean, if you have recreational so-called drones and you can fly it over, watch people do certain things, whatever, it gives you a sense of power and, how should we say, divine power to intervene in people's lives without them being even aware that that you're around until it's too late. And so the psychology of the using of these things and the sense of power that it gives is very dangerous because, of course, everything has consequences. And with the use of armed drones by the United States, one of the consequences, of course, is that people who operate these drones very often lose their minds emotionally are disabled and sometimes do away with themselves. And this is a known consequence to the people who are in charge, but it's evidently viewed as an acceptable attrition, in friendly forces to enable this kind of thing to go forward. And so there's a lot of very dangerous and, in my opinion, sick thinking that surrounds the use of these weapons.
Well, in a sense, though, isn't it? It's kind of reassuring that people still have a conscience enough to feel badly about what they're doing. I would say, though, rather than divine, maybe a diabolical power might be a better description of this push-button ability to end the lives of people on the other side of the world, or at least distant from where you sit in safety. But is it fair, though, to deny smaller powers these kinds of weapons to address the asymmetry of the enemies that they face? Specifically, I think of what happens in places where the mighty meet their power over the meek, America and Syria, for example.
Well, I think that depends on, your analysis and of not only what is ethical but if you spread out your analysis over a period of time, people can feel and do feel that this kind of violence, any organized kind of violence, is something that settles things, that makes things stop, that changes things, can change things for the better. But if you spread this out over time and look at what the consequences are of using violence, against other people, it's very hard to say that things have been solved or settled. Rather, the conflicts are usually prolonged and the suffering continues for a longer period of time. There's a study that was done, a book written probably about 5 years ago, where the researchers looked into how different conflicts were resolved, and they came to the conclusion that nonviolent resolution of the conflicts was a much more successful way when people basically took killing other people off the table as an option. So I think for a number of us working on this particular problem and this weapon, could you say we're pacifists? Yes, I would say that we are, in the belief and the observation that violence, and of course organized violence by different people, that is not something that brings a resolution. It may change who's in charge from time to time, but the deeper and underlying, very deep underlying causes of the violence are generally not dealt with, and keep everything on edge until the next violent eruption. And so the drones are in that category, I think, regardless of who uses them.
Well, and like everything that electronic, it's getting cheaper and cheaper, and it's not just state actors now that are having access to these, but corporate mercenary groups as is mentioned in your petition, the Constellis Group, formerly Blackwater, Russia's Wagner Group. Various terrorists or groups that are labeled terrorists in the West, Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah. I don't know if I agree with that one. But also right down to drug cartels in Mexico. And it's going to continue, I suppose, becoming more and more accessible. Attacks being conducted with these little swarm drones. We saw the attempted assassination a few years ago of the Venezuelan president using these little drones that people can buy down at their local electronics store or on Amazon.
Well, these things will definitely continue to be popular. The question is, is society going to just roll over and say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it, or whether there will be an organized objection to this, in the same way that there's an organized objection to other weapons that people have concluded are beyond what should be used. I would argue that organized killing this way with any weapon is unacceptable. But there are those weapons that present special, extraordinary power for leading to, to death and suffering. And I think we feel that this weapon is one of those that fits into that category. And in terms of, the police in this country have so far chosen not to use weaponized drones, but they have used surveillance drones. Mostly, for instance, the FBI has acknowledged they do use surveillance drones, but they have not. They've declined to say where that is and under what circumstances. We know that surveillance drones were used by police forces, federal and probably in state, local, when there have been demonstrations, George Floyd and other Black Lives Matter demonstrations. Many people, even in Congress, have objected to the police use of surveillance drones, much less weaponized drones. But we have to realize that the technology that we've spread around the world can come home to roost here in the United States. And at this point, people here in this country haven't had experience with that, thank God. But it's important that people have an imagination of what other people have experienced in other places and putting themselves on the receiving end of this kind of technology.
Yeah, I think you're addressing a major point there, and this lack of imagination on the part of people living peaceful lives here in Canada and the United States, and that can be sanguine about bombs dropping in the middle of civilian districts far away and not imagine what it would be like if the shoe were on their other foot. You argue in the in this declaration that these weaponized aerial drones, quote, violate basic human rights as guaranteed by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. How do these weapons differ from, you mentioned earlier, cluster bombs or landmines that also kill indiscriminately, if that is the violation that this is alluding to? If not, what is it?
If you look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, one of those is a right to privacy. Another is a right to due process, under law, where you are charged with a crime, where you have an opportunity to defend yourself in court before a sentence is delivered. When weaponized drones are used, those things are not observed at all. You say, well, it's under wartime circumstances. Well, what we've seen with the United States since 9/11 is a very broad application of the right to kill people, summarily made by American political and military leaders. There has been no agreement internationally that these people have a right to do this, and so there's a lawlessness that these weapons have actually encouraged. That is very broadly applied to our right to go into other countries and do whatever we want. Now, we have to understand, too, that these wars that the United States has been involved with are largely wars of occupation and colonial type wars to get resources. And so people in this country, believing the, government propaganda, I'm saying this country being the United States, people believing that, think, oh, well, the drones are mighty fine because we don't have to send our soldiers over there to kill those bad people. So there's an acceptance in the premise of you can go wherever your leaders tell you and kill bad people. And fortunately, now we have a machine where we can kill bad people. And humans are fearful creatures in any case, and very easily persuaded what to be afraid of in case they haven't thought it up on their own. And so we have leaders who have, humankind who historically come up with reasons to be afraid of somebody else and go out and kill them. And so that really hasn't changed since, the beginning of, human behavior. In this particular moment, we don't have religious leaders as we did during the Vietnam War, who guide people in their thinking about what to be afraid of and how to respond to fear. And so when you have a huge population in the United States or in North America or anywhere else where there is this fear of other people that's being generated by corporations and political leaders with a total ignorance of the conditions in these other countries and what's at stake, it's an extraordinarily dangerous population. And you put this weapon in their hands or in the hands of the ones who are in control of them and say, this is going to, help you by not having to send, your son Bobby or your daughter Jill over to do thus and so in some other country. And people are going to think that's wonderful until the shoe's on the other foot. And as you say, and finding out, whoa, the police are out here doing this to me.
Nick, we're fast out of time. Ban Killer Drones, Code Pink, Dronen Campaign from Germany, Drone Wars UK, International Fellowship of Reconciliation, International Peace Bureau, Veterans for Peace, Women for Peace, World Beyond War, all initiating organizers of this effort. How do people find out more about the Vienna Conference, Nick, and Ban Killer Drones and the work you guys are doing?
Well, the Vienna Conference, people can go on Google International Peace Bureau or IPB.org. They can also look at bankillerdrones.org, and that'll give basic information about what we're up to and about this conference.
Bankillerdrones.org. Well, thanks a lot for coming on again, Nick. Thanks a lot for being flexible. I screwed up our times this morning. And bon voyage and good luck over there on the continent.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate that. And prayers and good wishes are definitely so appreciated.
Well, peace.
Thank you.
And I'd like everyone else to stick around because I'm going to be back after the break with Mickey Zed, and we're going to look at the world from a New York City state of mind.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
They got the reason away.
welcome back to